My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Moss Show, where we're running through some of the latest breaking news headlines so you can understand the world as we talk about it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. And all three of those are converging nonstop. As a matter of fact, this week, big news in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space involving exactly that. Two big stories that I want to talk about that really highlight how this is all coming together. One of the things, obviously being a Bitcoiner and understand how Bitcoin mining works, Bitcoin miners process the transactions that allow Bitcoin to be transferred back and forth. They secure the network. Now, what's happened is when China shut down the Bitcoin mining, about 60% of the mining power was in China, and a lot of that came to the United States. We've seen it concentrate in Texas, and we've also seen it concentrate with big public companies. But for miners to become very efficient, they use what's known as pools. So the pools pool all the transactions together. So if you want to mine, you would then mine into a specific pool, and that would give you a better chance of actually finding the reward, and potentially you would be making more money. There's a handful of mining pools that are out there, and they each sort of work a little bit of a different way. So there is some sort of competition, if you will. Competition is always what brings us better products, better service, and better prices. It's game theory in action, if you will. This week, we saw a brand new mining pool come into place. And it was led by Luke Deshier, who's one of the Bitcoin Core developers, and also Jack Dorsey from, of course, Twitter, who you probably don't, who you already know who that is. And they've basically launched this new mining pool. Mumalin is the name of the company, and the mining pool is called Ocean. Now, shout out to my Bitcoin Opportunity Fund. We have a fund called the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund. I'm a partner of, and we are one of the key investors into this deal. So a little bit talking about my own book, but I want to explain why this is a big deal. If you'd like to figure out how you can get into some of these deals throughout the Bitcoin ecosystem, just visit bitcoinopportunity.fund. Again, bitcoinopportunity.fund. But what Ocean has done through Jack Dorsey, you might remember Jack Dorsey left Twitter. And Jack Dorsey said in many times in public addresses that he left Twitter to go work on the most important thing for the rest of his life. What is that most important thing? Bitcoin. So you might think it's stupid and just, whatever, some stupid tech, some mythical money, internet, magic money, whatever. But some of the smartest tech people in the world, like Jack Dorsey, see it as the most important thing. You might want to take note of that. Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world, said a couple weeks ago that Bitcoin people are going to Bitcoin for safety. So when the the largest asset manager in the world, one of the most prolific tech investors or tech creators in the world. When they say it's the most important thing, you might want to take notice. Either way, what's happening because of these pools, a lot of this mining has gotten centralized, and then these mining pools exert their pressure, their power over this, and have taken away the decentralization aspect of Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And specifically in regards to what I think is probably the most important key attribute of Bitcoin, which is censorship resistant. It's the main thing. It's what we want. Now, what we're seeing is a lot of these mining pools, like F2 pool, for example, it's the third largest mining pool, have started to be accused of actually censoring transactions. The United States government has a list, OFAC. These are compliant addresses. So if you're on a sanctioned list from the United States, they've put out these addresses and say these mining pools are no longer able to interact or mine or process transactions from these blacklisted sites. So they're censoring transactions. But Bitcoin is supposed to be censorship resistant. So how can that happen? And so these guys, Jack Dorsey and Luc Dashier, have started a new mining pool that is set out to solve that problem, to break the centralization that's happening, and as well as break the censorship that's happening as well. They're using a new type of technology. It uses something called KNOTS instead of Bitcoin Core. It's sort of like Bitcoin Core with a little bit of a difference. But basically, without getting into the technical side of it, here's why it's a big deal. It's that not just that there's censorship going on, but more importantly, that the miners themselves, if you buy one, you should have control, but also if you have a mining company, you should be able to choose which transactions that you believe are valid. What happens is when I go into a pool, I have to mine whatever the pool throws up in front of me versus the miner being able to choose that directly. And so this is a pretty big deal for a lot of reasons. It returns back individual choice. Now, it also breaks this centralization that's been happening, but more importantly, what it's doing is it's creating more competition. The market is now being given the opportunity to present a new business model and allow the market to decide which one fits the ethos of the industry, which one people like to use better, which one makes more money. If some miners and mining pools want to censor transactions, well, we can see how they perform versus mining pools and miners who don't censor transactions. And we can see game theory playing out in real time. Now, one of the reasons why I like this story is because as soon as this comes out, guess what happens next? The legacy media empire swarms and decides to try to throw up whatever FUD they can to try to take this down. As a matter of fact, mainstream media headlines are all over this week saying that Bitcoin transactions uses one swimming pool's worth of water. It came from the BBC. A Bitcoin transaction uses one swimming pool of water. Well, the world's made up about 2/3 of water. So I don't know, is that supposed to be scarce? It like falls from the sky all the time. But apparently that's a bad deal. It's a bad deal if you live in China, you don't have fresh water. But if you have fresh water, anyway, they're saying that it uses a swimming pool worth of water. Okay, is that a bad deal? Is that good? Is that bad? Well, there's a lot to say about that, but let's just compare it. So we have to always go back into some frame of reference. So what we see is that in order to get an EV vehicle, you need a battery, and inside that battery are rare earth elements, one of which is lithium. The lithium extraction process is one of the most water-heavy consumption extraction process that I know of. As a matter of fact, it takes approximately 500,000 gallons, 1.9 million liters per metric ton of lithium to get it out of the ground. So basically the miners have to go start drilling holes in the ground in these salt flats, and then they pump this water into the ground, and then it starts to get the lithium to come up. So 500,000 gallons for one metric ton of lithium. Okay, so how many metric tons does it take to build batteries? Or I should say, how many batteries can you make from one metric ton? A metric ton is about 2,000 pounds. And with 2,000 pounds, it takes about roughly, it depends on the size of the battery, but it could take about 2.5 pounds per battery. So you get 2,000 divided by 200, you do the math. About 1,000 at two pounds. So big batteries like Tesla. So you get about 1,000 cars. So it takes 500,000 gallons of water to make enough batteries for 1,000 cars. Is that good or bad? I don't really know either. There's a lot to go into that. What's the trade-off, and so to speak. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that we have other issues that use way more water, that use way more electricity. They want to talk about Bitcoin uses too much electricity. It wastes electricity, apparently. Well, there's lots of things that use more electricity than Bitcoin. For example, AI uses way more electricity than Bitcoin. Your clothes dryers at your house to dry your clothes, those use more electricity than Bitcoin. Is that a waste? I mean, you could just go hang your clothes up to dry in your backyard. Do you really need a dryer in your house? And so the point is not that these things are good or bad. It's to compare them against each other, but more importantly, to see through the veil of what's going on, right? We have a new form of competition coming out that makes it very difficult for the governments to use their power to censor and control. As soon as a little crack shows up in the dam and they start to lose some of their power to censor and control, then the legacy media machines come out to bang the drums to the public to change public perception, right? If they can change public perception, then they can get you to buy into their authoritarian laws for censorship and control. All right, that's how this works. It's the same old playbook. We've been seeing this for hundreds and hundreds of years. Well, probably since the beginning of humanity, in my opinion. The power has to control the narrative so they can control the people. But that's why you're listening to me, so I can show you through their thin-veiled false allegations of what's going on. If you're just tuning in and listening to the Mark Moss Show, I got a whole lot more news headlines to cover when I come back. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're running through some of the latest breaking news headlines, of course, as we always look at the way the world is changing, deglobalization, decentralization, as we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. And this week, we saw more signs that the legacy centralization is falling apart. The pendulum continues to swing. And I know some people call me an optimist or a dreamer potentially. They say, Mark, how can you say that the pendulum is swinging back from centralization to decentralization? Because everything I see is that we're getting more and more centralized. The UN is still trying to get more power. The WHO is still trying to get more power. The dollar is still strong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm looking at the signposts and I see these signs and they tell us what's happening. We can see the mood, the public perception all around the world is sweeping. We see in Argentina, they got a far right extremist in there. Italy, a far right extremist. In the Netherlands, a far right extremist. And the populism, the nationalism is taking over, unfortunately, slowly, but it's happening. One of the things I saw this week that was an amazing story that certainly I love the energy and the fire in, and you might have heard, but Elon Musk, we might call him a mega Chad, which I guess even calling somebody a Chad is like a right-wing extremist, male, white privilege, I don't know, something like that. But we'll call him a mega Chad. He has so much money and he just apparently does not care at all. And you see him voicing his opinion all the time. Well, if you're on Twitter anyway, he is not afraid to speak his mind. He is not afraid to stand his ground. He is not afraid to call out BS when he sees it. Now, I do want to just say that I am not like an Elon Musk simp here. I like a lot of things that he's done. There's also a lot of things that he's done that make me very suspect. And there's also a lot of things that he's done that I don't like. For example, I don't think you should be going around and getting a bunch of girls pregnant and having a bunch of unwed babies all over the world. I don't think that's probably a good thing. I don't like the thought of having microchips being implanted into human brains that he's working on. So there's lots of things that he's doing that I don't really agree with. There's things that he's doing that make me suspect, like what he's doing with the takeover of X, previously Twitter, working on a platform for everything where they have your money and your ID and all of that centralized. I don't like that. Makes me suspect of what he could be doing with it. But there are things that I do like that he's doing, like really, 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 really fighting hard for giving us a platform to have free speech. And so I'm gonna pat him on the back. I'm gonna congratulate him on the things that he does right. And I'll certainly call out the things that I think are done wrong. But in this stance, he was doing a interview with New York Times, and basically, he silenced the entire room as he proclaimed that, quote, if someone wants to blackmail me with advertising, they can go F themselves. I'll let you fill in the blank on that. What is he saying? Well, he's under all this fire. Media Matters filed this slanderous allegations against him. He's filed lawsuits back. And they're saying that he is anti-Semitic, he's a racist, he allows dangerous content, he's a threat to our democracy, all of these things. And advertisers are not going to give him money unless he goes and changes things, right? So they're basically saying that. And basically what we saw is Bob Iger from Disney had made allegations that they are not going to advertise on that platform if Elon Musk doesn't change it, if he doesn't start to censor some of the speech. And Elon Musk said that, they threatened that if there was an advertising boycott against X, then they could just basically blackmail them into submission, so to speak. But Elon Musk says, fine, don't advertise. If someone's going to try and blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, you can go F yourself. And then he said it again, go F yourself. Is that clear? He asks. I hope it is, he said. The whole world will know those advertisers killed the company and will document it in great detail. Right? And then he went on to say, okay, Tesla's done more than all the companies combined to help the environment. I've done more for the environment than any single human on the earth, he went on to say. That's debatable. I'm not going to back that yet. But what I do like is how he's standing the line here. All right. He is literally changing the attitude around the world, which is why he's enemy number one, by exposing the government corruption through the Twitter files. By releasing those files, it unlocked lots of other mysteries. By allowing citizen journalism to happen, the power of the crowd is able to come together and dig up stories and patch together things and connect the dots into things that might have been considered conspiracy theory in the past because we didn't have all the information. But now with all of the information, it's no longer theory. It's now gone into facts. We're seeing this happen all over the place. The tide is changing, everything from the narratives around the pandemic through the election interference, through the censorship and control that's happening. We're seeing it all. And it's pretty amazing. Now, there was a story that came out on Zero Hedge talking about a time to boycott Elon's boycotters. And so this is sort of where competition and game theory comes into play. I talk about it all the time, building the world that you want. Look, Well, I don't know about you. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I am not a victim. I am able to speak my life into existence. I am able to do the work to build the world that I want. If I'm not happy with something in my life, then I have the power to change that, nobody else. If I need more money, if I need more time, if I want to lose weight, I want to be in better shape, I have the power to change that. And I am responsible to shape and build the world like I want, just like Elon Musk is doing as well. And so we can do that partly through voting with our feet, but also voting with our money. And so if they want to boycott Elon Musk, then we can also boycott them as well. And like I said, this is an article that came out on Zero Hedge. You can go read it. But they're talking about how, you know, there's this ad demonetization and how companies don't want to advertise. So maybe we should support the companies that are advertising on Twitter. Now, in full disclosure, I'm not a fan of seeing those ads. As a matter of fact, I'm, you know, a paying subscriber, and so I don't want to see those ads. But maybe we should click on those ads. Maybe we should be buying from those companies to support them for supporting a platform like Twitter. If Twitter is able to return a better advertiser return, what's called ROAS, return on ad spend, if Twitter can return a better ROAS than Facebook or Instagram, then guess what happens? Advertisers come over. These advertisers like Bob Iger, they want to stand strong. They want to pretend like they're powerful. They want to say that we'll boycott your platform because you're going to censor. But they're greedy. They're responsible to their shareholders. If they can return a better advertising, a better ROAS on Twitter, they're going to use it. And so we just need to make it so. If we click on those ads, if we buy those things, you're going to buy things anyway. Why not click on an ad and buy it? Why not vote with your money? Why not show that you like free speech? And as a matter of fact, I'll support ads on Twitter, but I won't support ads on Facebook or Instagram. And if we do that, we'll quickly see how fast things change. It's up to us. Now, is it a pain to click on an ad? Sure. Would you maybe pay more for a product doing that than going through Amazon? Maybe. But look what you're supporting. What does Amazon stand for? What is Jeff Bezos standing for? Buying Washington Post and coming up with more fake CIA stories? Or supporting Twitter that's running for free speech? Some of the boycotters are Disney, CNBC, Warner Brothers, Discovery, Apple, Sony, Lionsgate, Paramount, IBM, boycott all those. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maw Show, talking about the intersection of politics, finance, and technology, and running through some of the latest breaking news headlines so you can understand the world in better context. I'll be back with more in a minute. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're running through some of the latest breaking news headlines that are the signposts that tell us where things are going. We look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. Now, we were talking about before the break, some of the things that's been happening specifically with Elon Musk, always making waves, always being the outspoken person. And I gave him some criticism and I gave him some credit. But there is another celebrity that's been making news this week and has found himself in the crosshairs of the government. And I am talking about UFC legend Conor McGregor. One of the most charismatic, outspoken, you know, people in the UFC, which is the world of MMA, mixed martial arts. And he has now found himself a target of the state for what? For speaking out in support of his countrymen, for speaking out in support of mothers and children. That's what he's in trouble for. You know, you can tell a lot about the state by how they prosecute crimes. How do they prosecute crimes from people against people? How well do they protect the people? Or how do they prosecute crimes against the state? That tells you everything you need to have, and that's exactly what we're seeing play out right now in Ireland. And the reason why this is important to you is because it's not just Ireland. It's the EU, it's Europe, and it's the United States. It's most of the developed world. It's also Canada. It's also Australia, and it's coming to a country near you. Now, what we saw, like I said, UFC legend Conor McGregor called Ireland to rally together and ensure that the stabbing of three young children and two adults last week is never repeated. That doesn't sound too bad. Sounds pretty good to me. The problem is that, well, the problem for Ireland is that the suspect is believed to be a foreign national. And there's a problem where most of Europe has a massive immigration problem happening all throughout Europe, sort of like what we see in the United States happening as well. About 8 million people have come across our border. That is not an inconsequential number. But all throughout the UK, through France, through England, and in Ireland, they have massive amounts of immigration. And there's fireworks. There's lots of I hate to even say the different types of crimes because it's just so heinous to even say, but it's bad. And here we have immigrants, illegal immigrants potentially. I don't know the exact details of that. But when we have violence break out and the people are dying and the government doesn't do anything to protect the people. If you think about, go do your research. The role of the government is to protect the people. That's it. Let me just break this down for you philosophically. I wasn't planning on doing this, but check it out. Okay. You as a human, you have a right to your life and property. Okay. I have a right to do that. I have a right to defend my life and my property. I do not condone. I don't believe anybody has a right to exert aggression towards somebody else. It's sort of like a libertarian non-aggression principle. But you have a right to defend yourself. All right. Now, collectively, if I'm under attack, me and my neighbor and I could join together to defend myself and my property. Maybe my neighborhood could join together to collectively protect our neighborhood, our property, and our life. Maybe as a city or a state or a country, we could collectively join together to protect our property and our lives. And that's exactly what the state is. Because I have the power to defend my life and my property, then collectively we can assign that right of protecting our lives and our property to groups such as the state. That is what the state has power to do. The state does not have power to exert power and control outside of that right, no more than I do. I can't just go say, well, I can do whatever I want. No, I can defend myself. That's what I have the right to project power on, and that is what goes to the state. So if you look at the founding of any nation, or the founding of the United States, the role of the United States government is to protect its citizens from Well, have you sworn in on the Constitution of enemies, both foreign and domestic? So they're supposed to secure the borders. They're supposed to defend us from invasion. Well, 8 million people coming across the southern border is certainly not protecting us from invasion. That's in the United States. It's happening in other countries. That's what's happening in Ireland. Now, instead of protecting the citizens like they're supposed to, instead they attack the citizens. Instead of protecting the citizens of the United States and closing the border, who knows potentially how many terror cells could have come across the border? We have no idea. Instead of protecting us from that, they're attacking the citizens. Let's break it down. Conor McGregor, so he went to social media, he went to X, and he voiced his anger at the stabbings. Hey, everyone should be angry. He told his followers, quote, "We are not losing any more of our women and children to sick and twisted people who should not even be in Ireland in the first place." Oh, wow, the hate. That is so bad. As a matter of fact, I'm going to read the quote. Hopefully I won't get canceled for it. He said, "Isn't that something? The absolute picture of a weak and feeble. The most divisive of all is the weak man." Okay, so I'll break there. So the legacy media, the world, they want to tell you that toxic masculinity is a problem, that strong men are the problem. But as he's saying, as I would agree, you think strong men are dangerous? Wait till you see weak men. And that's what he says right here. He's saying that the most divisive of all is a weak man. You ever heard of the Napoleon complex? Right? The Napoleon complex is when you're a little weak man, you have to pretend like you're big and strong. If you're a big 6'4", 250 pound, muscular bodybuilder, MMA, you're typically not trying to show that you're strong. It's like why guys that drive sports cars don't typically drive them very fast. Everyone already knows they're fast. And so you think strong men are dangerous. Wait till you see weak men. And that's exactly what he's saying here. He said, "One of the most horrific crimes this nation has ever seen has occurred. We do not care anymore what you sad cases have got to say. In a war, you are nothing. We are not backing down. We are warming up. There will be no backing down until real change is implemented for the safety of our nation." Now, you would think the nation would get behind that message, because isn't that the role of the nation? The safety of their people? That's what he's asking for. "Until real change is implemented by the safety of our nation." Yes, the nation should be on board with that. He goes on to say, quote, "We are not losing any more of our women and children to sick and twisted people who should not even be here in Ireland in the first place." That has now put him in the crosshairs, and he is now under investigation for a series of tweets saying that because of the stabbing, now he is sparking hate speech. And under a new law in Ireland, that's a crime. Now, in Ireland, there was massive riots, or not riots, but protests that happened, erupted. A bunch of people, you know, looted and threw stones and rocks and whatever. Conor McGregor did actually say to not do that. He did not condone the violence. As a matter of fact, he said that it fixed nothing. He said that. So he actually spoke out against that. And then throughout Ireland, we've seen people starting to graffiti messages that say Irish lives matter, which now the police in Ireland are saying that is a hate crime. So by being pride of your nationality, of your country, that's a hate crime. This isn't like a race. This isn't saying like white lives matter, which they said was a hate crime during the BLM thing. This is Irish. This is so anybody that's in Ireland, if you've immigrated to Ireland, you went to Ireland because you want to be in Ireland, you should also be proud of Irish. So to say that Irish lives matter is a hate crime, I mean, it's just insane. You know, this Algerian-born man lived in Ireland. He stabbed these people. Bystanders intervened. They ended up getting stabbed. They should be doing something about it, in my opinion. And instead, again, the nation, which should be out there serving the interests of the people to protect their property, to protect their life. Maybe it's just the United States thing. Life, liberty, and happiness is what we're known, but it's actually life, liberty, and property was the original writing of that. And that's what the goal of the government is, to protect those things, not turn them into hate speech. But again, this is what's happening. Canada has been passing all new sweeping laws on what they consider hate speech. The United States has been passing new laws on what they consider hate speech. But the problem is, how do you define it? If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I got to take a very quick break, but I'll be right back. Don't go away.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're running through some of the latest breaking news headlines as we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. Now, updates on the economy. We are now facing record-breaking markets in 2024. The S&P 500 could hit a record 5,100 next year, breaking records, at least according to Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank says that there is not just a soft landing, but no landing at all, that the plane will continue to take off. Now, the old news that you've been hearing from the banks and from the media and from the talking heads is that the market's going to crash, the market's going to crash. When the Fed raises rates, the risk-free rate goes up, the stocks have to come down, right? The PE ratios have to come down to adjust for the risk-free rate of return. When mortgage rates go from 2-3% to 8%, home prices have to crash, right? Have to. No, they don't have to. They don't have to because they haven't. People have been talking about a housing crash since the Fed started raising rates. They talk about a market crash since the Fed started raising rates. And here we are, 2 years later. Now, if you tune into my main YouTube channel, Mark Moss, you know that I've been telling you for a year now, the markets weren't going to crash. I think I've made 9 videos breaking down why. I don't just say that. I break down the math and I show you why. And here we are. Now, I do want to preface this by saying, yes, 100% I can, well, 99.99% I can guarantee that there will be a market crash. That's because crashes happen all the time. The question is when. I'm not saying there will never be another crash in the history of the world. I was just saying for the last year, it wasn't going to happen this year. And I tell you why. And the reason why is because the Federal Reserve, the central banks, the monetary system cannot deleverage. It can only go up. Now, nothing goes up in a straight line. It goes up and down. We're sort of in this sideways sort of consolidation, crab walk, whatever you want to call it. The markets are going up and down, up and down, up and down. We're staying in a predictable range. So there's always movement, but not the big crash. And now the mood has totally changed. Deutsche Bank says that next year we'll see a record high in the S&P 500. Now, Deutsche Bank, they've become the latest big name on Wall Street to now issue this bullish stock market forecast for 2024. And most of the analysts are now starting to come and change their tune as well. And it's no surprise. Like I said, the markets haven't gone down. They haven't gone down with the Fed raising rates. And now here we are, the Fed getting ready to start lowering them again. So we survived the rate increases. Here we are ready to start seeing the rates go down. Now, a couple of things I want to say. First off, they said that the stocks have to go down because the Fed funds rate went up and that we have to see a recession. But have we already had both? As a matter of fact, if you remember for this year, the first two quarters of this year technically saw a recession, 2 quarters of negative economic growth. Now, the Biden White House came out and said, oh, technically that's not a recession because not all the factors are there. But we sort of did have a recession. They said that the markets would have to crash. Well, they sort of did. The S&P 500 went down by 27%. That seems like a crash to me. Now, maybe they were expecting 60%, 80%, whatever, but maybe we've already gone through it. Now, I don't know. Where am I at? Well, let's see. 5,100. Will we get to a new all-time high next year? There's no such thing as certainty. There's only probabilities. So we think of what's probable. Let's see. We're going into an election year. So right off the bat, we know they're going to need the markets to be up. No incumbent president has ever won when the markets are crashing, which is part of the reason why many people say that the markets were crashed with Trump running in the last presidential election. And so no incumbent president, meaning Biden, could win in a market that's crashing or a recession. So right off the bat, they don't want a recession to happen or they'll probably lose power. So they'll probably do everything in their power to keep it going up. We also understand the constraints. And I talk about this all the time. The constraints of where the Treasury and the Fed is and the amount of debt that we need. They have to continue to print. So it looks like we're going to have an easing monetary environment. We're going to see an expanded monetary environment. And the political appetite will also be that there is no recession and the markets don't crash. So the powers that be seem pretty aligned to not keep the markets from crashing. Now, the problem with that is that if they do that, then we see massive inflation. We've already seen massive inflation. So it's a proverbial rock and a hard place. We either let the markets crash and inflation goes down, or we don't let the markets crash and inflation goes up. Well, which would you choose in a political environment where you want to win the election and when you deal with the constraints? Then you have these wars happening. We got the Ukraine thing going on. We got the Middle East thing going on. So the inflation is not because of the monetary system. It's not because of the banks. Inflation is because of the wars. You see, you're already starting to see this in the headlines all over the place. I'm seeing headline after headline. The White House is coming out with saying this. Scholars, academics are coming out and saying this, that inflation is not because of the deficit. The inflation that we've seen is not because of the increasing monetary base. That's what they're saying. Headlines are popping up all over the place. They're already starting to condition you. Why do we have inflation then? Oh, well, it's because of supply chains and it's because of wars. You see? So you're already starting to see this shift. And now the banks are coming on board. Deutsche Bank's coming on board. We got Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, RBC, BMO. They're all the Wall Street firms that are now predicting an upbeat for 2024. All right. Now, if you listen to the first segment of this show, if not, you missed it. Go back and check out the podcast. I talked about two types of crashes that could potentially happen. Most people think it's going to be a deflationary crash, but there's also an inflationary crash. And so just because prices go up doesn't mean it's a good thing. So go back and listen to that. If you need, search the podcast, Mark Moss Show, you'll find it, or go watch it on YouTube at the Market Disruptor Show. But what we're seeing is the Federal Reserve's aggressive interest rate hikes are now backing down. The dot plot, the analysts are expecting that the rates start coming down. And so if we've survived it this far, we can continue to make it. Now, there is no such thing as certainties. There's only probabilities. You start with what you think your base case is, what you think is the most probable outcome, and then you prepare for other outcomes should they happen. Then what you do is you closely watch the signs to figure out which one's going to happen. It's sort of how the FBI does their threat assessment. So the FBI would use a model to assess threats, and they would say, okay, here's two potential things that could happen. I don't know. We could have a bombing and like a knife attack. I don't know, right? So these two things could happen at this event. If we were going to have this happen, what are the steps, the signposts that we would see to lead to that? Or if this would be the threat, what would be the signpost that would lead us to think about this threat assessment? So they come up with a couple of different, right, based off of probabilities, a couple of threat assessments, the steps or the signposts that they would see to get to those outcomes. And then they watch. And then they go, oh, well, these couple signposts came true. So now this has become the most probable outcome. And that's exactly what you and I need to be doing. We have to look at what are the potential outcomes, inflationary crash, deflationary crash. Great. What has to happen in order for those to happen? And we watch that. In my opinion, seeing how the Federal Reserve has responded to the crises, I mean, look what happened when the banks collapsed earlier this year. Within 6 days, boom, They set up the BTFP, bank term funding program, and got $100 billion into the banks to prevent the banks from crashing. Well, a couple banks went under. No depositors lost money. So everyone's like, oh, Mark, but don't you understand that this BTFP, they built up $100 billion and the Fed doesn't have a plan for that. And it's going to be really bad. And the banks are just going to lose more money because those bonds, the prices are too high. Yeah, the Fed can just take more of them. But Mark, you don't understand, $2.9 trillion in commercial real estate mortgage bonds that are going to go bust, or the banks are going to go bankrupt. Or the Fed could just put them on their balance sheet like they did before with mortgage-backed securities. Oh, you don't understand though, Mark, like these companies could go, their stock could drop, okay? And the Fed could just buy their stocks like they did in 2020, right? And so look at the counters to each of these. Mark Twain said, it's not the things you know for certain, it's not the things that you don't know that get you in trouble, it's the things that you absolutely know for certain. If you're just tuning in and listening to The Mark Moss Show, running through some of the latest breaking news headlines this week so you can stay informed, stay one step ahead of these central bankers and authoritarians. That's what I got. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.